All right, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll get started where everyone else does. As far as earliest childhood memories, what are we getting into?
So this one, I'm a huge professional wrestling fan.
Okay.
And the 1992 Royal Rumble where Ric Flair wins. I remember being a child watching it because my dad and my mom had friends over to watch it.
Okay.
And I was like 3 years old at the time, but don't ask me why I remember this, but I just remember having marshmallows, but they were like flavored marshmallows, like, you know, the pink orange ones.
Okay.
I didn't really
like
them. Yeah. And I was a huge Hulk Hogan fan.
Okay.
And Ric Flair ends up winning.
Yeah.
And I think I cried that night that Hulk Hogan didn't win, but I remember that specifically. And that's like one of like the earliest things I can remember as a child. Like that's one that always like comes back to me if anybody's asked me that before.
Well, I've had friends say that they like WWE. Like, how did your parents get into it? Or like, what was that in?
Well, I think in the past, it was a bigger... So my dad was always into it. I don't think my mom was ever into it. It was just after she met my dad.
Yeah.
He made her watch it. Right. But he would watch like Dick the Bruiser, Ric Flair, like back when, like in like the 80s, 70s. So he just watched it his whole life. And the story that he had told me about me watching it or finding out that I liked it was as a baby, I would be sitting there and he'd be flipping through the channels. And when wrestling was on, I would calm down. And when he'd flip to a different channel, I'd start screaming and crying. And like one day he started messing around with it and he kept switching back and forth. And he's like, I think this kid likes this stuff. And so like they would just play it all the time. And to this day, I still watch it. But it's like almost like I didn't have a choice. Like, it was just like as a baby, I was already doing it. So anyways, for some reason, that's one of the memories I remember. The other one, like there is one other one. I have no idea how old I was, but my dog at the time like bit me on the nose. And I remember that for it because like I was bleeding. I think I don't know if they took me to the hospital or not, but it was bad. It was like traumatic enough that I remember my dog Stacy biting my nose. And I must have been messing around with her. Shouldn't have been. But anyways, like those are the two that usually stand out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as at three, we find out we like wrestling.
Yep.
What did that? Did you continue? Like, were we doing chokeholds or like what are things looking like as we're growing up there?
I have a little brother who's about 3-4 years younger than me.
Oh, no.
So once he got old enough,
no chance.
So we would wrestle all the time. We put figure four locks on each other, sharpshooters, everything. So we'd do that. Before that, my parents would just buy me wrestling buddies. So like like big pillows of like Macho Man, Hulk Hogan. So I'd be, you know, wrestling with them. So I'm sure there's videos or like, you know, cassette tapes or something out there of me like jumping off the couch and landing on that stuff. And then, like I said, when my brother got old enough, then we started doing our own stuff. Then we'd be stupid and play with ladders and stuff. Because by the time he was old enough and he was watching, that's when, like, Mick Foley, like, Mankind comes out and he's jumping off of cages and stuff. So, you know, just went on from there. Mm. But, that was it. Played with him. And then my little sister, she's about 8 years younger than me. So then she didn't have a choice either. Like, all three of us would have wrestling matches with each other. So... Yeah.
Did the parents ever have to say like, hey, be careful, or everything was just like, this is what it's going to be?
No, we got yelled at a lot.
Okay.
There would always be like maybe something broke. Like I remember one time that we knocked the lamp off of the, if this is the recliner, wherever the table is next. We knocked a lamp off of it and it broke and nobody was home and we were freaking out. Like dad's going to kill us. Mom's going to kill us. So we got in trouble for it. And then sometimes you get a little bit too rowdy or something where like maybe I was being too mean to my brother or vice versa. Like I wouldn't say he was ever too mean to me since I was older.
Right.
But like if something got out of hand, then it would be like, you know, William, quit doing that to him. You know, I'd get in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were boys. We got out of hand a lot of times.
Yeah. So. I'm figuring out now that I have a daughter, like before these questions, I was like, oh, I'm interested, like how things developed. And I'm like, all right, for my daughter, what am I going to have to figure out? Like, is it a different sport I put him in? But it feels like things are just going to happen.
Is daughter your first one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So right now I'm like, all right, we're going to do some rock climbing. Like we're going to run around a little bit, but it's just like, when I see some boys out there and they're just, they're going after everything. So I'm like, we'll stay away from that at the moment.
With did you rock climb when you were younger?
When I was younger. I was actually scared of heights, but now I do more rock climbing. But it's like we're trying not to. I did teach her how to headbutt the other day, you know I got to work on these things.
Headbutt.
Yeah. So did you play? Did your parents put you in the sports? Were they pushing academics? What were you doing as you were younger?
I'd say a little bit of everything. I had pretty good grades as a kid. I had, I think I just like the normal stuff. Like I pretty sure I played T-ball. I had a couple years of soccer. I was not athletic at all. So I was the goalie. Like I wasn't like, it wasn't like I was like out in the field or anything. But yeah, they put me in that. I remember playing baseball for a year or two. And then, fifth grade, when I was allowed to, then I joined the wrestling team.
Okay.
And then that became like the only thing.
So,
at that
so
point.
For you, naturally, you knew that at some point I'm going to do wrestling. Is that kind of
pretty much
you knew that was coming? Okay.
My dad had wrestled in high school as well as he was a coach, like an assistant coach at Evergreen Park, because my uncle was the head wrestling coach at Evergreen Park for a long time. So, kind of grew up around that type of wrestling as well, not just the professional wrestling or the WWF stuff, but yeah. Just knowing that, I just knew, like when fifth grade came along, I knew I could join the wrestling team.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do it, so went for it.
So what was wrestling like in fifth grade? Did you have good coordination, or it's just like, we're grinding this out kind of thing?
That's a good question. I honestly, I don't remember. Because like I said, I was not athletic at the time at all. If like you saw pictures of me or anything, I was just like a doughy fifth grader. Like there wasn't, you know, there wasn't anything like special about it or anything like that. I remember liking it and remember it being like, you know, challenging, hard. And God, I really wish I could remember. There aren't any really like good stories or anything. I just remember just kind of like just making it through. Like I don't think I made the team. Like maybe they have like one tournament that they put you in when you're like, when you first started, anybody can do it. But that might've been it. Cause then I think sixth grade I started, and then I didn't finish the season. And then seventh grade is when like I got serious about it. But there wasn't, I didn't think it was going to be like pro wrestling or anything like that, but like it clearly is not anything like it. And so I just, so I don't know if I even knew what I was like getting into or anything. It was just cool to wrestle or say that I wrestled.
So you said you were a doughy fifth grader. Was that something that somebody had called you? Is that just kind of how you felt? What did that mean?
Looking back, that's how I felt. Or like if I look at a picture of myself and I see it, I'm like, wow, that like come a long way. That's good. but I don't know. Like my friends, like they made football teams, they made baseball teams. And so a lot of the people I was hanging out with were like very athletic, ran fast miles, things like that. So, you know, you always kind of find yourself comparing yourself to people that you're around. And so compared to my other friends, they always seem to be a little bit better physically at that stuff. So I just probably had some negative thoughts about myself when I was younger. Also, like, go back to my parents. My dad, like, weightlifted his entire life. Always has a gym in the basement. I grew up, there's baby pictures of me with dumbbells next to me. My mom ran marathons. So always around that type of stuff. And it just cracks me up even more because you see them – clearly they work out and do stuff. And then you look at me, it's like, I wrestled and I didn't do it that well at that time.
So would you say like you were obese, overweight, or you just weren't cut? Like
just,
what?
Somewhere between like not cut and overweight. It wasn't like I was like, I don't want to sound mean, but it wasn't like I was like a lard or anything. It wasn't like you looking like, oh, look at that fit. Nothing like that. Like I would never be picked on my weight, but just like comparatively speaking to what I was around, I was the one that wasn't doing well. Like I remember, I think maybe fourth grade or fifth grade doing the mile run and it took me like 16 or 17 minutes. Like I was the last one doing everything. And it's like, that's not good. You know, so
what did those like, so for me, I'll try to make this a super long question, but for me, when I always refer to my past, like people ask me, like, oh yeah, like I was a fat kid until like after high school or whatever it is, I go back and look at photos. I was like, where, that's not that bad. Like, where did I get this thought from? And like, I had so many negative thoughts. It's like, I'd wear a shirt or I'd hate changing the changing room or whatever it was. Like, did you ever deal with any of that stuff? Or
you're like spot on. Like, that's exactly how I felt. Cause I look back and I'm like, I'm not that bad. Like I said, like if look at me like today compared to that and be like, okay, that's not the same. But that's exactly it though. You kind of like hit the nail on the head. I've never had this conversation with anybody really like that before, but it's, you look back and it's like, it's not that bad. But then like looking back on who I was around, what I was trying to do and how I wasn't doing well at it. That's probably why I had those negative, you know, those negative emotions surrounding it. Because even like going into high school and like when I was getting better at wrestling and I felt good about it, like I was losing weight. I wasn't pudgy when I was getting into high school and becoming older. But I still feel like there was probably that mentality in the back of my head.
Right. Yeah. Where do you have like a place that you feel like it came from? Like for me, I think I got a lot of my thoughts from either like movies or shows or just like not necessarily the things people would say around me, but like you said, like the athletes over here, like somehow every kid is jacked.
I guess I could blame it on, that sounds bad, but like you said, like, or like I was saying before, the kids that I was around, but then also, pro wrestling.
Yeah.
So like you're watching these like bodies who are just phenomenal. Right. That at the time probably all steroided up.
Yeah.
But then, so my dad weightlifted, he had a subscription to Muscle and Fitness. So that's what I, like, I was reading Muscle and Fitness my whole life. So you see Arnold Schwarzenegger every other day and then comic books, huge comic book fans. So, like they're like every single thing has like these like super heroic looking bodies. Yeah. Like, oh, this is how people are supposed to look. If I saw somebody not looking that way, I thought they were the weird ones.
Yes.
So I guess now that we're diving a little bit deeper into it, that's probably a big part of it too. Like that's just what I grew up with. Like, this is normal.
Right. Well, and it's hard because like I have some women that I talk to, it's like, who do you talk to these things about this? And usually like the women that feel intimidated or whatever it is, like it's just more cattiness going on. It might be, they don't feel as good, but there's not like a lot of conversation that you can have with kids about it because that's just what they see. That's what they hear. So is there anything that you would have needed to hear or like, I don't even know how that would be presented to a kid at our age.
I don't know. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard for me to put myself back in that mind frame or that mindset. And I guess this doesn't necessarily answer the question, but also the way that I grew up is part of the reason why I am the way I am now when it comes to fitness and working out and things like that, where it's like, I don't want to look or feel that way. So I'm not saying it was right to feel that way, but since I did and I figured out there's a way to not feel that way, it's like, cool, work harder, work out more, get your, you know, nutrition, like eat right. Yeah. So it's like, if I didn't have those problems or think about things that way, I probably wouldn't be going as hard the other direction as I am now.
Gotcha.
So I guess without answering the question, it's just like, I'm almost glad that it was like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer. So 6th and 7th grade, obviously we're into wrestling, but you said you did good in school. What would you attribute that to?
That's a good question. What did I have? There was maybe up until like 5th grade, I was like pretty good, like solid, like A's all the time, maybe a couple B's. And then I remember getting a bad grade in science class in 5th grade and just being scared for my life. Like, I don't want to bring that report card home. Like that was it. Like, I don't want to let my parents down.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably like the main thing is I just don't want to I just don't want to let anybody down on this, or feel like I'm not smart enough. Like it was never a huge, I never really cared about it that much. It wasn't like the main thing. But I catch on to some topics pretty well.
Yeah.
I was always pretty good at math. I didn't have to try very hard, but then like in high school, like I would be put into an accelerated class and I would suck because I didn't actually like do as much homework as I should have practiced it enough. So like, cool, I could do a normal class and it kind of goes by like a breeze. But then the second I'm in with the smarter kids, like I'm the one who's like falling behind is because I'm not putting in any work towards it. So I guess it was more as a thing of like, just bring that report card home. Like, man, mom and dad are going to kill me. Like, I can't, you know? So I think that would be the main motivating factor to get better grades. Or
I feel like me and you were on the same path. 5th grade, got that one bad grade, but I went and told my mom, I got a C. Like, I thought I was going to get held back. And she's like, oh no, like you're not going to get held back. You'll still go to middle school. And then from there, I'm like, we're coasting.
Dude, exactly the same. Because I thought it was like wrong not to get A's. Yeah. And as soon as he's like, it's okay that you got a B, I'm like, oh, cool, I'll get B's then. It's like, which is a terrible mindset. Like, but I just, I remember being liberating, knowing, because for me, fifth grade, I got a D in science.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm going to get killed. This is it. And after that, and like knowing, didn't get held back, didn't get in too much trouble.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. So there's some wiggle room here. There's some B's and C's I could throw in if I want to. But I think that was like the main thing.
Yeah. So seeing your parents, your dad working out all the time, your mom doing marathons, was there a discussion around health and fitness, or like what was going on there?
There's always some sort of, conversation going on, because my dad would be going to the gym, or she's going out for a run. Maybe it was like freshman year going into sophomore year. I think it was that year, but she was training for a marathon. She asked me if I wanted to do a half with her. So we trained on that. So I did a half marathon. I think it was like 14 or 15 or something. So it's like, if that's what you mean by discussions, it wasn't like they talked to me necessarily like, we need to talk about your fitness and your goals. Like, it wasn't anything like that. It was just like, my dad was a member at Lifetime Fitness. He's like, hey, do you want to come to the gym with me?
Yeah.
Like, you're 12 years old, you're allowed in there. Like, cool. So I go with my dad. Same thing with running with my mom. Mm-hmm. It was just, so they are very inclusive with anything they do. They have zero issue with their kids coming out. They wanted me along with as much of it as I could. So
that's awesome. Yeah. As far as the nutrition aspect, was there any, hey, you need to eat this or don't eat this, good food, bad food?
Not really. No, I don't think, like, just obvious ones, things like that. But I don't recall having any type of discussion or conversation about that. I'm still figuring it out today, like what I can or should eat. And then there's always kind of new information coming out, or you just kind of find what works for you. Yeah. Like, and so anyways, there wasn't really a big conversation or talk about any of that stuff. I'm trying to think what a normal meal would be. But like, we'd have like Chef Boyardee raviolis, and we're like coming home from school, and like I'd throw one of those in the microwave. So it was just normal stuff. I think we'd have dinner, at dinner time, everybody was home. And what that was it.
What would you say your relationship with food was?
I don't think anything bad.
Okay,
food
was just food for you.
Yeah, I don't really think anything bad. I like treats. I like cookies. I like brownie. I like all that stuff. I'll eat it. I've never had anything bad happen or anything to the point where I feel like I have an issue or a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was growing up, I got allergy tested, allergic to everything. Then when we got to the foods, it was wheat, soy, and corn. So that's in everything. So the doctor's like, hey, don't eat this stuff for like 10 months. But, like once a week or once every other week, you can have the food and just like see how it goes. So that just created a terrible relationship with
good
food.
Lord. So how did you get around that?
I just did not have a very interesting diet for a very long time.
So what did you, did you ever try out having the food?
Oh, every once in 2 weeks? For me, I would get an incredibly runny nose. Mm-hmm. And then I could for the first 15 or so years of my life, I couldn't breathe through my nose. Like I went to a yoga class. We did it at the Y, and the woman's like, oh, like you need to be breathing through your nose. And my mom over here would be like, he can't breathe through his nose. Just like my allergies were that bad. Like I took allergy shots and stuff, but for food, they didn't have a fix for it yet. And, but it just created a like binge idea. Like don't listen to your body when you're full. Where my wife, she went growing up, she had all the sweets available. And it's just like, oh, I'm full. I'm going to stop eating them. And I was like, that's not me. It's like we got work on that. So even with wrestling and stuff like that, did you ever have to cut to make weight, or what was that like?
I wouldn't use the word like have to cut. Like I chose to cut weight. We had a pretty good team. I think I was wrestling varsity like sophomore year, junior year. So we had a good team. So like the guys who were a weight or two above or below me were making it down to state and everything. Mm-hmm. So it kind of like, you just kind of fit the puzzle.
Yeah.
Like I could have wrestled up and faced one of the guys that was heavier than me, or even probably like wrestled down if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. I was 135 my freshman year was the weight I wrestled. And when I say cut weight, it was like, I weighed like, I walked around like 140. Okay. So it was like 5 pounds. It's nothing.
Nice.
That's, right, that's easy. And then the next 3 years I wrestled 140, okay, but I was growing. So it was like maybe sophomore year, if I was at 140, I was really walking around at like 145, 150. Then the next year was like 150 to 160. And I distinctly remember my senior year walking around 170. And so I ended up losing a lot of weight for that. Nobody told me or asked me to do it. I never said anything to my coach. It was like, oh, I'm weighing this much. Like, it was just, like I said, we had a very solid team that year and we thought we could make state as a team.
Yeah.
So I went to Lincoln Way Central.
Okay.
So it was part of the Southwest Suburban Conference. And Carl Sandburg High School is also a part of that. And they were like ranked number one in the nation, I want to say, for like those 2 years that I was like junior, senior.
Yeah.
It's like I don't think we were able to make it out of that to like make it to like team state that year because of that team.
Mm-hmm.
But we won for it. So anyways, I cut down from 170 to 140. Like I said, it wasn't like all in one day or anything like that. It was like at the beginning of the school year, I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop eating like an asshole. I'll start eating a little bit less, make sure everything's on point.
Yeah.
And then by the time I actually had to cut some weight or like lose weight, I was like feeling like crap, like those last few pounds. That would be maybe like a day or two before. And I knew I was like 6 or 7 pounds over, and it's like, okay, you can sweat that off. Like you go to sleep, you wake up, you're 2 pounds lighter. It's like just by sleeping.
Yeah.
So
did you ever do like sauna? Did you ever have bags over you and stuff like that at the end or?
Nothing insane, but there would be times because wrestling season is during the winter time. So there would be every once in a while, there'd be like a 2 day tournament and you have to weigh in both days. So they give you a 2 pound weight allowance the second day. I don't know if that's still a rule or not, but it would be if I was wrestling 140, I had 140 that day, but the next day I had to weigh in at the beginning of the day at 142.
Yeah.
Well, you're eating, drinking everything during that first day.
Right.
So there were like two or three occasions where it's middle of winter. I don't know how
you gotta just
cold it is.
Blow it up like no nothing after that first day.
Yeah. So you do all that, you'd wrestle, and like wrestling 4 or 5 matches in a day, like you're burning a lot of calories too, losing some weight. But I just remember a couple times where it'd be like 7, 8 p.m. at night, it's dark out, and I'd put on like 2 or 3 jackets, not necessarily even sweat more, just like it's just cold out.
Yeah.
So then go run a few miles, come back. Or I was a member at Lifetime Fitness and they have saunas there. So I'd go maybe like work out, like run on a treadmill and go in the sauna for maybe like 20, 30 minutes. And like I'd go back and forth between the sauna and like just the regular pool. It's because it gets so hot in there.
Yeah.
I just wanted to cool off for a second and go back in. And then I'd weigh myself on the scale and see where I was at. And like I said, like that 2 pounds is like a magic number. So if I knew I was within 2 pounds, then the next morning I'd wake up, I'd be good. I just have to make sure I don't overindulge or anything throughout the day.
Yeah, I like that term, like not eat like an asshole, because like I say that a lot because they're like, oh, like what's going on? Are you losing weight? Or like, why are you switching that up? I'm like, because I'm eating like an asshole. Like I know not to do that or not to do this or indulge too much, but that's a very good way to say it because it's taking ownership of what it is.
Exactly. And it's very simple. Like if you actually like write down what you eat. And when I was younger, I wasn't writing anything down, but just like now if I'm working with somebody or somebody has questions on their diet or something, it's always like the first step, like, well, let's write down what you're eating.
Yeah.
And then really, I don't even have to say a word to you. I can just look at you and be like,
yeah.
And you'll be like, okay, I'll take that off. And it's not like you're in trouble for doing it, but you can look right at it and be like, okay, I know I probably shouldn't have this.
Yeah. Yeah. Simple. Well, and it's overindulgence. If we look at any non-first world countries, like they just don't have the food. Like option of opulence that we have to be overweight, so it's we're lucky to be in that position.
Right, we're lucky we could be fat if we want
to. So moving forward through like wrestling and stuff like that, obviously you're doing decent in school. Were you able to have hobbies at that point, or was it mostly school, wrestling, and stuff like that?
I went to church a lot when I was in like throughout junior high school and regular high school.
Okay,
a couple of my friends that they became my best friends, but they all went to a church in my hometown. And so they invited me to go to their youth group. So that would be some stuff I do on the side when like wrestling season wasn't around. So it'd be stuff like you go to work camps and you go to like some, you go to some town and help build a house or like fix something at a house. And it'd be like a week long trip. But that was probably like one of the other things besides that, like like I wrestled, worked, I said all that other stuff, but like also just like a huge like nerd, would play video games. One of my best friends had a pool table in his basement and a foosball table. So you almost always find yourself over there at the house and we're all just, we're playing that whenever we want to. And we get sick of that, play video games, you know, go outside here and there, do this, do that. So just, I'd say just normal kid stuff. There wasn't anything, there wasn't anything that I was like super into. When wrestling season
hanging
wasn't
out
around.
Buddies.
Yeah, that's it.
When like the church group stuff, did you feel that they were pushing like more community, more church stuff? Like what was going on there?
The thing that was really cool about it was when I first started going, it would be like you'd play games. Like it was like on a Wednesday night. I forget what the name of it is right
CCD?
Now. CCD? No, so it was not CCD, but it was just like all these... There would be the youth minister there. And anyways, it would be like, you know, if it was nice out and it wasn't like middle of winter, like you'd be outside, like play some version of tag or something like that. So it was like very active moving around. Sometimes if it wasn't nice outside, we didn't have room to do stuff, then it'd be like card games. But it's basically just like, just go hang out, but you're in a church. And so anyways, when I first went there, they didn't really push like anything religious at all. And I grew up around church my whole life, so it wasn't like I didn't like know what was like I didn't know what was like going on at church or like I was against it or anything like that, but anyways that's why I kind of like got into it and started liking everybody that was there, and then that started turning into more of the religious side of it. So then like I would only go on Wednesday nights, and then started finding myself coming in on Sunday mornings and then do that. And then after, I forgot when I fell off on that, but I used to go there often, like maybe like 2 times a week. Plus, if there was something else, little known fact, I was in the church choir for like 2 or 3 years.
Oh, let's go. Yeah, right? How are those pipes? Good singer?
I don't think so. Like they needed guys because there were only like 2 or 3 of them. And I forget why I even got into it in the first place. But like a couple of my buddies were doing it.
Yeah.
And they were all in band in high school, and they had done other stuff, and their families were part of the church. So I ended up joining in on that. And so it'd be like Sunday night, I would go there, and that's when choir practice would happen. It's not anything I'm like, I wouldn't say not proud of, but it's not anything I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm a great singer. Listen,
not putting
like
that on the resume.
Right. Not at all. But it was something to do. And so anyways, I would be there a couple days a week.
Yeah.
And then I forget what the original question was?
Well, I was just wondering how religion or church was like for you around then.
Yeah, so sorry. So then after that, like as I got older, because I think I started maybe 7th or 8th grade, but then as I was getting older, like closer to like senior year, then it would be, you know, now you're talking to people and friends who are like, they're going off to college, so they're getting a little more serious. So then conversations also got a little bit deeper too at church, where it would be like a Bible study instead of just, you know, playing the games or stuff like that. And then the other thing is like, as you're getting older, you see all these other kids coming in and doing the same stuff that you were doing before. Yeah. And it's like, okay, like that was fun a couple of years ago, but then you start, you know, seeing the benefit of having like, I guess, mature conversations and it's like, okay, cool. I like this as well. But yeah, that's what kind of got me into it, is they didn't push anything at first. And then it's like, it just kind of naturally just came along. So, yeah.
Would you say, as far as like the mature conversations go, were you able to bring things up that like you had a hard time talking to anybody else with, or like?
I'm pretty closed off, especially in group. Like I'm not going to say a whole, I guess I coach. So that sounds stupid to say, but like if it's just me and I'm not coaching or I'm not doing something, I really don't talk a whole lot. I just kind of keep to myself unless I know like a majority of the people. So I wouldn't really bring anything up, but I digested a lot of it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And like, maybe if it was like a one-on-one conversation with, the youth leader or, you know, somebody else who was there, then, you know, talk to somebody about, you know, like I said, those deep conversations or deeper ones. But more just like a sponge, just like, I just like soaked everything up. And there's like, there's just like little things I still like kind of remember, like in the back of my head, I remember like hearing it or like hearing the Bible verse and how it was related to real life or what's going on. And those things stick with you. So it wasn't necessarily anything that I was putting into the conversation, but just stuff I was kind of taking out of it and applying to what felt like it could be applied in my life.
Mm-hmm. So moving through high school, did you have a job or what was going on in that?
Yeah. So one of those best friends I was just talking about his dad was the head groundskeeper at a golf course out in my hometown. So when I turned like 15 or 16, I think it was when I was 15, because on the way to work, they'd drive by my house. So they'd pick me up.
Okay.
Like, I forget if it was like 6, 7 a.m., yeah. but taught us how to basically cut the fairways, cut the tees and the collars, do all the other stuff. And so anyways, I was a groundskeeper on a golf course for a few years. And then after my friend went off to college, I was going to JJC. So I still stayed at home with my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I was still down the street. So I still got to keep the job.
Yeah.
So during summers and springers, like anytime when they could golf, my dad, my friend's dad yeah. would call me up like, hey, do you want to stay on for another season? So I would go in there. So I was keeping that job through like the summer and part of the high school year.
Yeah.
And then I ended up keeping it even when I was in college. I had another job. I was working at Kohl's okay. overnight after I started going to JJC. And so I'd do both of those jobs, right? I'd work overnight and then go straight there to cut the fairways and stuff.
What was the groundskeeping jobs like? Was it just pure manual labor? Was it kind of boring? Like what was going on?
A little bit of both. So it would be something like as boring as just like I'm cutting the fairways, okay. which like I said, so, like some days I would get off of like an overnight shift, go straight there and do it. I'm falling asleep at the wheel and you can see the line. So it looks terrible. So then I have to go back through and fix the lines. So I guess that's kind of exciting, but it's like that was a boring part of the job because right. it's just very monotonous. It's going to take you 2 or 3 hours.
So when you're mowing it, the lawnmower, is it? It's just the direction that you go creates the lines, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it's just I don't know if like the turf is a good analogy or not, but it's just like when you're pushing, whether it's a regular mower or one of those big like fairway mowers, it's just the blades of grass are going this way, yeah. so it looks, you know, shinier or lighter on that right. side. And then when you turn it back around and you come down the other way, it looks dark.
Gotcha.
So that's all. So anyways, with that being said, especially in the morning when it's still dewy and everything, yeah. you can see the lines perfectly. Yeah. So you can see when I went off and I'd like, you know, gotcha.
So when you go over it again, it's not like you have to cut it shorter. You're just moving the grass blades.
Exactly. So gotcha. Yeah, it wasn't like you're cutting more of it. They're set to where they're set to, so they can't go any further
okay.
or lower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was like I said, that part was kind of boring, but then you'd have stuff happen. Like there's like a wasp nest in the bottom of a willow tree. And okay, now like these things are stinging the golfers. So we got to go take care of it. And the head groundskeeper was great. Like I loved him. He's like, I said, he was one of my best friend's dad. Yeah. So he was like, you know, like second father to me.
Yeah.
So anyways, he's like, all right, go get the can of gasoline. It's like, all right, here we go. So like literally like, amazing. We're going to get this out by dumping this gasoline. We're going to light it on fire. Wasp will be gone. And then, so it's like, so you get to do some fun yeah. stuff like that, you know, like stuff, like if I had to put on a resume back in the day, like we built sand traps. We also built like staircases, things like that.
Yeah.
The dad was the one who was like, you know, obviously like in charge of all of that right. and like put it together. But, me and whoever I was working with that season, we would put like, we'd be the ones working on it.
Yeah.
So there were days where you're doing something eventful that, but I would say most of the time just doing the same stuff, like show yeah. up, I'm doing the fairways this day. The next day I might be doing the tees, collars. Mm-hmm. Only thing I didn't cut was the greens. That was always, his job
okay.
or like the owner's job. He knew how to do it too. If you mess that up, that's just going to piss off the whole world. So there's no, don't leave it in my hands.
So did you ever get into golfing when you started working there? Or?
It actually kind of did the opposite to me because really? I didn't like a lot of the golfers. So I just never wanted to play. And so like by the time I got done with work, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to be here at all. But yeah. technically I could have gone and played after every single man. Day. I just didn't. So, yeah. and I'm not against it or anything. I just never got into it. And then there've been a few times I go to Top Golf and I just get aggravated because I can't.
Yeah.
Most things I could pick up on pretty quick or I get like a feel for it. But for some reason with golf, like whether it's a driving range or whatever, it's like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe one day I'll go with somebody and like, you know, they'll help me out. But up until I feel like I actually have an idea of what I'm right. doing or how it's going.
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't fun. Like, this is just like annoying the shit out of me and I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
And now I'm not fun for anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of had the reverse effect. I wasn't, mm-hmm. I wasn't into it because I had to wake up at like 6 a.m.
right.
every morning to go
and deal with it. So when you say you didn't like the golfers while you were working, like mm-hmm. what kind of shenanigans were they doing?
You know, it's not like everybody was like this, but there's just like, you know, you have one bad thing happen in the day and you can call it a bad day. But, you know, just some of them were, some people would be rude. Some people would like talk down to you, like, just, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
And then also, the owner of the course wasn't my biggest fan, and I don't know why. There's a story there, but I can't recall what it was. Mm-hmm. But I just remember a couple times where he would call me into the clubhouse after I was done working, and he actually, after my first season, I believe he fired me because I was gone for a season. And the next season, the dad brought me back. But after that, I'm like, well, this guy doesn't like me. I don't want to be around him. So like, why would I want to be on this course anymore?
Yeah.
And so I just left it. I'm just going to go there for work.
Right.
I'm going to leave. That's it. If
the
head garage, his name is Sonny. But I was like, if Sonny was there, I'd be there. If he wasn't there, and there was always a week where he'd go on vacation. So like during those 5 or 6 years that I worked there, there would be a week where I was just there with the other people. And it was just always an awkward week because they had different stuff they wanted done with the course. Or they maybe didn't think maybe he wasn't doing well enough. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, that is the main reason because of that. It's like, I just didn't want to be there for work or deal with that guy anymore, as well as you see some funny stuff happen when people are golfing, whether they're good or bad or whatever. And so you see how frustrated they get, or I have to sit there and I'm waiting for these people to go. Yeah. Like I'm supposed to be cutting the tees and they're still going, and it's been like 5 minutes and they can't hit the ball. And I'm like, I don't want to be here. And it's like, it's funny at first, but then you start seeing this stuff happen.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, I'm bored. I'm tired. I just want to go back home.
Yeah.
So
I went golfing with my buddy, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. First time I had golfed this year. I don't really golf too much. Mm-hmm. And we got the earliest slot because his kid also is going to wake up soon. So we're playing 9 holes. And on like the 7th hole, like the guys cutting the grass had been in front of us, but we finally caught up to him. And so we're chipping around the green, and he's just watching me, and like I'm just missing the hole. Like I chip past, like we're going past on that side. I got to chip again. Then we're putting. And I'm just like, I'm so sorry. Like this was this was rough. Yep. It's just like, can't imagine happening over and over again.
And also, like sometimes I would be the problem where it's like somebody's about to go tee off, and I have to get through. So like if I'm on the fairway and I'm cutting the fairway, and there's someone about to tee off. It's like there's not like a proper hand signal or anything, but it's either like, hey, wait for me, or hey, I can drive off the course, lift the blade, so I'm not going to like run over anything. And sometimes they didn't care. Sometimes I'm just turning around like, oh, I won't hit it that far. And then, you know, the back of the grass cutter gets hit. Or one funny time, we were raking the sand trap.
Yeah.
Just trying to like, you know, you try to equal it out. So we were doing that, and I don't know. I mean, it's like a 1 in a million chance, but somebody hits the ball, hits my friend in the mouth. And like, I'll just never forget the noise. It was like it was like, that was the ball hitting him in the face. And then the sand, like the sand somehow sounded louder than his face. And he just got so pissed off. He's like, what are the odds that like it just gets belted right into your jaw while you're literally like raking sand. It's like, and so it's like in a situation like this, like there's no way you don't see two kids in the sand trap, but you decided to hit it anyways. There was no four. There was no, hey, we'll wait.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, you learn your lesson. You're like, okay, well, like if anybody's even like close to hitting, like we're just going to get the hell out or watch.
Yeah.
But you do it so many times, sometimes you just forget about it and you're just doing whatever. And then something dumb like that happens.
What's the worst you've seen someone get frustrated on a golf course?
That's a good question. I don't think anything, I don't have any good stories or like anything better than you'd see on like a YouTube clip.
Okay.
I do remember once the guy kind of got frustrated, but he was teeing off and somehow he hits a bird in midair. The bird explodes. You just see feathers go up.
Like Randy Johnson.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Like literally, I can't make this up. I can't believe it. Like I couldn't believe I was there to see it, and he couldn't find the ball. And he was upset he couldn't find the ball after he hit it and everything. And
kills I just remembered, where's my ball?
Yeah. And that's, I remember that situation happening. I'm like, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe he's worried about the ball right now. Like, not that you need to feel, I guess you could feel
that.
Well,
that would make me not like golfers right there.
So it's like little stuff like that. Man, I'm trying to think. Well, if something comes to me, I'll let you know. But there have been times I've seen, because the time that I would be working, it was a lot of like regulars. So it would always be like the one-off person, or like, you know, a family comes in, you never see them before or after that day.
Right.
And there's somebody who's just not good, or maybe a father son comes in and the son doesn't care, but the father does. So he's getting aggravated. The son doesn't seem to care. Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a moment in golf where I get that angry. Maybe when I get good, I'll start getting that angry, but I have not. I've just been like, you're the one doing it. Like, I don't know if you think you should be shooting like Tiger Woods, or like, do you think you have the skill and then you don't? Like, I've just picked up archery, and like, if I make a bad shot, like, it's on me. Like, I'm not like trying to blame anything else, but it's the frustration part really gets me, because like, I don't know who they're getting angry at. Like, maybe it's themselves, and that's okay, but it's interesting to me.
It's very frustrating to not know or understand why something's happening. That's just the way I look at it.
That makes sense.
And so like, that's why I was saying, like, when I play Top Golf or something, like, it's not going anywhere that I want it to go. I'm like, I don't even understand why I'm not doing it. Like, to the point where like, I record myself lifting. Like, like the last time I went, I think I literally like set up a camera so I could record myself swing, as if I know anything about golf or how the swing should look. But I was like, maybe I'll see something. It just looks wonky. Let me ask you, when you get frustrated or when anything like that, do you just get really quiet, or do you start cursing, swearing? Is there?
I would say if it's something in my control, I try to say like either good or goody goody gumdrops. It's more of a hard to make it like a bad thing.
Okay.
Usually if I get angry at something, it's because I like stubbed my toe or like hit my head on something like I did yesterday. I was standing on the back of a truck and our balcony was over and I stood up and hit it, yelled. I mean, if my wife listens to this episode, she'll probably tell it otherwise, but generally I'm not much of a road rage type of situation.
So then do you like just sit and brood on it, or are you able to just let it go?
Generally, if it's something that I can control, I'm like, okay, like I can fix something on this end. And then if it's not something I can control, it's like, well, I can't do anything about it. So I try to take a monk kind of thought process around it. Like, I used to not so much, but I take it back to when I tried to talk to people on the internet and give them my point of view. It just wasn't working. I used to get very frustrated about it. So I don't get as frustrated anymore trying to deal with people online.
Yeah. That's going to be so hard. Are you just talking about just like sending a message back in a comment, or
it would usually be in comments. Like it could have been like a friend or something like that. Like I'd be going back and forth with them, and it's like, there's no way I'm going to be able to change this situation. I used to think that I looked at everything from my point of view and everybody else should have that. But I'm like, you're coming at it from a different point of view. Like that's not on me. Like I'm going to be able to let this one go.
Yeah. Not only that, but then like when people are on comments or even just texting on the phone, there's so much that gets lost in translation that it's like people also have a way different point of view in person than they do behind a computer or behind a phone or something too. So it's like, that's aggravating to deal with. Do you find, you said you didn't used to have that mindset of like having ownership of it, or like knowing like, okay, I can control this. I won't get mad about it, 'cause I know I can do something about it. How long ago did that start? Or like when, like, is it more recent, or
I would say it's a continuing process. That I used to not like, I used to blame a lot of things. It wasn't on me. But as I get older, it's like, okay, like, yes, I have this tool that I know that like I can either control it or not control it. So let it go. It's really easy to say that, but to continuously do that is another process. Oh, yeah. And I would say usually I'm ever improving, where we'll say in high school, I was maybe at like 5%. Like I'll take ownership of it. And I'd say maybe we're at 80, 85% now. We're getting there.
Was there a catalyst that got you thinking that way or trying to improve on that?
When I was in outpatient therapy, my doctor, so very long story short, went to a therapist. I had been going for a very long time. To a lot of different ones. She told my mom that I needed to go to outpatient therapy for suicidal thoughts, then went to outpatient therapy. And after like 6 months of not really knowing why I was there, other than being told that's what I was thinking, I was at the gym. I was with my uncle there because I had to have someone around me at all times. And I was just like, it's just like a thought that just kind of I ran with. I'm like, this is not what I'm going to do. I'm just thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then from there on, it was like an emotion is like something that could just be passing. Like everything that I thought, I used to think it was something, but now it's more of a, okay. I stub my toe, ow, that hurts, like, that's fine. Or it's just, I have this emotion of sadness, like, that's fine. I appreciate what it is, and then we can move past it. Now, it's a very simplistic way to look at it, but it was just like, for me, I always thought that was whatever you're thinking, it is. So mm-hmm. I think from there on, it's like, okay, I can have a reaction to something, but it doesn't necessarily mean I have to stay on that thought.
For sure. You said it was like a simplistic way, but I feel like it's also like profound at the same time. Cause like, as you were saying that, I feel like that's what they say with like yoga or meditating yeah. is like, I remember somebody might've been, I forget, but it's something to do with like traffic and cars going by. It's like, everybody's like trying to control the traffic, but really like meditating is like being able to sit there and just like watch it go by rather yes. than trying to control it. Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of. Yeah, saying
there's for meditation, there's a conversation of finding like complete silence. And that would be like somebody that shows up to a retreat and is like, oh, I've discovered enlightenment. Like, I think zero thoughts as I'm just sitting there. And the Buddha, whoever it is, it's like, okay, tell me when you're not thinking. And like, they were never able to do it. And he says in meditation, you're able just to sit there, a thought comes in, and it's allowed to leave with no like continuation of thought.
Got it.
That was kind of the direction that I try to take things. Now, okay. Once again, we're talking to my wife or sometimes my mom. I'm not so great at just letting it pass in and out, yeah. but we're working on it.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, as long as you know it's there, like yeah. what you've admitted, there's not even a problem. Everybody yeah. has to deal with that, I feel like. But that, I don't know, that's a cool way to look at it. That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, and just like you said about the image for yourself, and you are who you are now because of what you dealt with when you were younger. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I had a cush childhood and like no issues on that end, I wouldn't be where I'm now, and I'm very happy where I am now.
That's good. Right.
So you said in high school, then you went to, what was it, JJC?
Yeah.
What is that?
Juilliard Junior College.
Okay. That's okay. And then what brought you there?
I was originally thinking about joining the Marines with one of my best friends, and when I was talking to my parents about it, I was too young to sign up. I was like 17 when I got to the pulley system, and God bless my parents for this too, but like they would never sign on for me to do, like I'd have to make my own decision right. on it. So they're like, we're not signing this off for you. You can do it when you're 18 and okay. you can go, but we're not going to sign on and say like you're 17.
Were you doing it with your buddy so that he could get a higher ranking? Or
no.
Gotcha.
His whole life he wanted to be one. He became one. Okay. He's still like best yeah. friend to this day. But anyways, he had just talked to me about it. He goes, hey, you should come with me and do this, because they would do workouts, they do stuff like that. Yeah. So I went in with him a couple times, and then the sergeant there, you know, talking to you, hypes up the whole thing. You walk out of there wanting to be a Marine. And anyways, so that's what had happened. And so my parents said, just try a semester yeah. at JJC first. Like, we'll pay for it, we'll help you out and everything. And then you can just like, then you can make a decision after that too. So they basically didn't want me to feel stuck saying like I had to do that
right.
or anything else. So that's why I tried it out, and it was within driving distance from my house. So I didn't have to worry about much.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's how I ended up there. And I wasn't even really sure what I wanted to do. I went in there with the, I went in there with the idea of becoming a cop or some sort of law enforcement.
Okay.
So like my two or three semesters I went there was like primarily gen ed, and then criminology, law enforcement, stuff like that. And then at some point, that's when I found out that there's like a personal training certification
yep.
that they were like a satellite school for. I believe it's called WITS, like World Instructor Training. So I could be wrong.
I won't fact check you.
No, yeah, I forget the name. I know it was WITS, WITS, but I just can't remember what it stands for yeah. exactly. So anyways, it was a 6-week program, and you would have like 3 or 4 hours in the classroom and then 3 or 4 practical hours at like a gym down the street from okay. the school. So when I found out about that, like I was telling you before, like I worked out all the time with my yeah. dad, worked out with my friends, especially during wrestling and everything, and off season, we'd always work out together. So they would always joke around that I was their personal trainer. Yeah. Like I'd be the one who kind of like took the charge on what we were doing. So it kind of just like fit in, like, okay, yeah, I'll go become a personal trainer. So I did that program. I did all that. And then that's when I got certified, and it seemed like a legit thing to do. Cause a lot of certifications now, it's like, you just go online, buy one, like you do the test. Like they make you like, you know,
a legal test. Yeah. Of some sort.
Yeah. And so I just know like you could easily just like go on Google, do that, find the test, take it like a week later, you could be a personal trainer. With this one, since I had to do like the 6 weeks of the schooling, I had to do like maybe 250 hours of like,
that's quite a bit.
Working with another person. The numbers might be wrong, but I remember having to reach out to different gyms and asking if their personal trainers would let me shadow them.
Gotcha.
And so that was really cool to do. Kind of got me out of my comfort zone to do that because I didn't want to ask anything. But it was also very, it was a confidence builder when I saw what some of the people that I was shadowing were doing. Because it's like, okay, this isn't so far off from what I'm doing already. So I'm like, okay, I'm on the right path in terms of that. But yeah, that was that. During all that, like I was saying, I was working at the golf course, working at Kohl's. I did overnight at Toys R Us for a little bit, and then Walmart.
So you like these overnight jobs? What's that about?
I don't know. Like, there's not a reason for it. Like, you know, honestly, it was probably because it's like $1.50 an hour extra that you make. So I was like, oh, cool. Like, look how much I'm making. And then not thinking at all about how it affects your life, which is just like, okay, cool. Like, two days off in a row is really like a day off because you're just trying to recover the first day. And then the second day is all yours, but then your sleep schedule is so messed up. Nobody wants to hang out with you or anything.
Yep.
Not at the times that you're actually awake too. So anyways, when I was at Walmart, I originally took the overnight position. It was just what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And luckily one night the day shift managers came in because maybe we were falling behind on something. And we were all working together, and one of them was like one of the salaried managers and asked if I wanted to work days because she wanted like somebody like me on her team.
Yeah.
And so she was like best friends with the owner of that store.
Gotcha.
So she's like, hey, we're taking Will onto the morning shift.
Yeah.
And that was it. I was like, at the time I was like, well, that kind of sucks. I'm not getting the same bonus, but then, sometime thereafter, like after a month or so, I became supervisors.
Okay.
So I was able to like kind of make that up, but also I didn't realize how nice it was to not have to do overnights. Cause that's just what I had been doing. So, it kind of just worked out that way. We're just kind of like float into like, okay, now I got days. And then I remember when I got a call from Export about getting the personal training job, because I'd put in some applications. I think I was stocking shampoo on one of the end caps when I got a call from
Export.
Yeah, Export. Yeah. I was trying to think how to relate it because it was my future boss at the time, but ex-boss now. Yeah. But anyways, I remember like exactly where I was at when I got the job.
Okay.
Because I was very nervous, like, step towards that, because I think I'd had that certification for at least like a year and a half before I'd really done anything but I really pursued it.
Yeah.
I had just kind of thrown out little applications here or there, like looked at places, but I never really jumped on it. And that was the first time that somebody came back to me and I was like, this is like kind of nerve wracking.
Yeah. So were you still working at Walmart while you started working at Export?
Yeah, for a little bit. Because I didn't know what to expect with it at all. So when I went into Export, I had the interview, everything went pretty well, but again, like I had zero idea of what happens when you walk in there. So it had to have been after like the second day or so. Cause like the first day you kind of shadow the other coaches or the other trainers. And then that's when they're kind of like, okay, you're on your own. Like here's how many hours are in a week? I forget right now. It's like,
hours and like you get 24/7 or what are we?
Yeah.
40, 80, 60.
Yeah, that's all I mean. It's like, so there's like 24 hours in a day, 48, 2 days. So anyways, like here, like you have this open schedule, go find people to train. That's kind of like, they just kind of like leave you at that. And I was lucky that my boss liked me. So, and he was trying to get bonuses, and he gets bonuses based off of what all the other trainers are bringing in. So he would go onto the floor, talk to people, and he knew I had an open, an open schedule for the most part. So a lot of people that he would pick up, he would throw over my way. So I didn't have to go out and talk to too many people.
Yeah.
But one of the only reasons I think he did that too was because the first like 2 weeks I was there, they gave me a binder and they said, yeah, if, you know, if you're not going to walk the floor, here's like 100 pages of people who've bought personal training but haven't used all of their sessions up.
Wow.
So I think like the first week to maybe 2 weeks, I was just on the phones every single day calling every single person.
So they knew you wanted it.
Yeah. I think there was one or two other people who came in at the same time as me, and I don't think they were doing that. Like, I don't think they stuck around very long afterwards. So anyways, just like making it through that first week or so and like trying with the people that I had gotten, and like out of those hundreds of calls I made, maybe like five or six people showed up, but they ended up becoming clients as well. So it was like, I feel like showing that hard work like helped them to like be like, oh, here. And then that was like another neat thing is like even the other trainers, like some of them had clients they didn't want anymore, maybe just didn't have time for, or just didn't fit. So they're like, hey, I got this person I can't fit in my schedule. Do you want them? Awesome. So you just keep taking that on. So those first couple of weeks that I was there, and I was like, oh, I'm only getting paid if I'm training somebody.
Right.
So like all those hours I'm calling, I'm only making X amount of dollars. I'm not even making my training money. I was like, okay, I still need a job. And luckily the people at Walmart liked me. So I don't think I never lied about like having that job or anything, but I remember telling them like, yeah, I got a personal training job. I got to do this, this, and this, but I'll still work whatever hours I can. And then I remember like after I started getting some clients in and I kind of realized like, okay, I can make as much here as I'm doing at Walmart.
Yeah.
I remember just like kind of putting in my 2 weeks and like, hey, you know, just let us know if it doesn't work out, you know, you got a job back here. You know, luckily I didn't have to, but that was a very seamless transition. They were cool with me. Cause once I told them I got that job, I stepped down as the supervisor, I believe. I was just work, like I just did normal like inventory stuff in the mornings. So that I wish I could remember how long that all took, but there had to have been at least probably like a month where I was working both jobs.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good to be making consistent money as a personal trainer like that early on. How did that feel?
Pretty good. What I remember is seeing the other guys that had been there for years and had just like this full schedule. Cause there's a whole chart on the computer.
Yeah. I had a buddy that worked at Expert as a personal trainer. So he'd always show me like, I got another one. I was like, that's great.
Yeah. And so it's just literally just blocked off every hour. And you see whoever, I won't say any names or anything, but anyways, like you see one guy who has like 12 hours a day, Monday through Friday, he's making the most. He's also has the best, he gets the most compensation because he's making the most returns. I forget how much you made off of it, but depending on how many PT sessions you sold, you also made a bonus at the end of the month. So like you see what some of these guys are making, you're like, damn, they're making a lot compared to what I was making at the time. So there was always that. So it was kind of nice to see like more successful people do it and how they were doing it. For me, like, you know, money was better than what I was doing at Walmart, but I was just excited more or less just to be able to train people or work with people in general. Cause like at that time I'd never done anything like that and I'm pretty introverted. So for me to like go up and like talk to new people is like, it was always exciting.
Yeah.
If you will, like it was like, you know, like kind of nerve wracking when you go like talk to somebody for the first time or have your first, like orientation or session with them. So that's what I remember more so than like making money or anything like that.
So when you say pretty introverted, what does that look like for you?
I just don't go out of my way to usually like talk to people. Like if I'm sitting there like with like friends at a bar or something, I'm just sitting there. Like if somebody comes up to me and talks, then like I have no problem talking, but I just get apprehensive or like anxious when like if I have to like go out of my way to say something to somebody, which like I said is so weird with my jobs that I have because it's what I'm doing the whole hour when people are snatching or cleaning or something. For some reason it just clicks for me like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go talk to this person or I'll go do this and this. But whenever it comes to like a normal atmosphere, that would be the part that would like kind of freak me out a little bit. So that's why it was really nice that my boss was doing that and like going and like getting people off of the floor, selling them the PT and being like, here's your new client, take them. Cause that was just like an easy introduction, which is, like I said, like with the analogy, like being at the bar and sitting there, it's like, if somebody came and like introduced me to another person, cool, talk to them all day. But making that introduction is the part that I get like really apprehensive about sometimes, if that's the right word.
What was your training not your schedule, but like, what was your theme? Were you mostly like hypertrophy? Were you doing a bunch of cardio? What are you doing?
Well, so it's actually, depending on the person's goals.
Okay.
For the most part, hypertrophy is what they, is what most people want to lose weight in some way, but you're always going to kind of form it around building muscle because most of them aren't lifting on their own as it is. So,
well, most people, they'll come in and say, I want to lose weight and build muscle. I was like, oh, okay.
Perfect. Right. And so, so weight training is always going to be the most, to me, that's going to be like the most beneficial thing to do, or like the most beneficial thing you can do with me for the hour.
Right.
Because you can go, you know, run on the treadmill, you can do this other stuff, but with me, let's like take advantage of that.
Yeah.
When I was done wrestling in high school, JJC didn't, I don't think they have a wrestling team. So I did MMA for a couple of years. I done a couple of jiu-jitsu tournaments. I did a match once. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Oh, yeah. How long did you, so I just moved back to Batavia, the gym I went to for like a month doing jiu-jitsu, right before COVID happened. Like I'm going to start going back there. So nice. I was very excited. But how did you get into jiu-jitsu and like take me down that path?
There was a place in my hometown, New Lenox, that had just opened up. These two brothers, Ron and James Hill.
Okay.
And so it was just called Hill Brothers. I forget. It had some, had something behind it. But anyways, I want to say it was called like HCX something. So anyways, I was just like, okay, I wrestled. So I called him up and I said, I just want to do something. Cause I, you know, you miss that competitive drive and, you know, I've wrestled for a good chunk of my life. So I want to be able to do something with that. Not just like, oh, I guess I'm just done.
Yeah.
So I went over there and most wrestlers, I feel like, take to jiu-jitsu very well.
Oh,
so
I hear they're a nightmare for like people that are like seasoned jiu-jitsu people. And they're like, what is this?
Yeah, it's very annoying. Like I couldn't imagine like if you've been doing jiu-jitsu for like, you know, 10 years and somebody who's never rolled on the mat before comes in and they can control you, or at least like it's not like I'd ever be able to tap out somebody who was a good jiu-jitsu person, but I could at least like hold my own.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Eventually they might get me, but it's like, it's gotta be, it just has to be annoying. Like, oh,
I think that's only great though to show like, hey, you've been training this for 10 years. You're still like, you're missing some stuff. Like that's awesome.
For sure. That's a great way, a great approach to it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, I don't think anybody was like actually like legitimately annoyed, but it's just, I know when people came in after I'd done it for, like I said, I only did it for maybe like 2 years, like a year and a half.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like it was like a huge spread of time, but it was enough where, like I said, I did maybe like 3 or 4 different like jiu-jitsu tournaments, some sort of tournament, because there would always be different, there'd be a different rule set or a different setup. Like there was one I did, I think it was called Pancration, and it was like you're set up in a gi, you have, you know, MMA gloves on, and
is that
there's no striking to the head.
But is that open hand strikes?
No. So that's Pancrase.
Pancrase. Yes. Gotcha.
So Pancrase was something different, and I forget what country that it originated in, but my coaches, those two brothers I told you about, they were big into it. And so anyways, I think that one was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. But anyways, I remember going up to Green Bay and having that, and it was really just a tournament. It's like you can strike. You get a point for each strike that you hit.
Yeah.
You can't hit the face or anything, but you can hit like chest, anything else. You can leg kick. You can also win by submission if you take them down, or if you do anything else, you can submit them. So anyways, I remember doing – like that was one that I did, and there was just like a straight just jiu-jitsu tournament that I did in maybe Kentucky. And then in Joliet, they had one. I forget – how I did in that one. It was either like second or third place. There was some kid, like I'd beaten like maybe one or two kids. And then they had like a double elimination bracket. And I wrestled my whole life. Like in like wrestling was like my, like the tournament that I knew. So it's like, if you lost, you went down to the next bracket and the best you could do is third.
Yeah.
But for some reason with this one, I just remember I lost to the kid and I had to face him again in the finals. I'm like, he already kicked my ass. Like there, I'm not like, I went in
we
there. I tried
know
my best
what's
going to
happen.
So, exactly. And it's like, And if you've rolled before, then you know it's like, no, this guy is head and tails above me. It's like, cool, like maybe I can, and I think maybe the second match I did something crazy. Not crazy, but it was like, I'll do something that I know I would never actually try, and like maybe it'll catch him off guard, and that didn't work either. Yeah. So I ended up losing that guy twice. But yeah, I done a couple of those things. So anyways, relating that back to export and training, a lot of the things that my boss would do is like, after he knew that I would do that, I would have some of the people, like boxers, hit pads or something, just like, so some sort of cardio. And it would be a lot of times like somebody's just mad at work or mad at their you know, their spouse, their kids, whatever's going on in the day. It's like, I need to get some aggression out. And so if he talked to somebody who knew they were like that, like, oh, well, Will here does, like, you know, he used to do MMA and pad. So that, I guess that was kind of like a little bit of a niche, but I didn't do that like exclusively. But it's like, if people wanted to, I'm like, cool, you want to get some cardio here at the end of the hour? Let's do that. And so that was, I guess that was like one of the specialty things that I would do with people. And then, besides that, it was just the, just normal training, weightlifting, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you were, where would you see the best success with clients? Was it because they listened to everything you did, or like what was the progress you would see from your clients?
It'll probably just seem cliche, but just the people who are most consistent, like they would come in on the days that they weren't even training with me. So I'd see them on those days. And even if they didn't necessarily know what they were doing on those days or whatever, you just, you see them in there like every day around the same time. And then the days they got to work out with me, they put in just as much effort. I would say like I said, I feel like it's like just too cliche. It's like, that's the easy answer, but it's also the truth.
Oh,
it's
like
if you just keep coming in, you're going to see something happen.
Yeah.
Either that or like the people who are getting married. It's like, if somebody has a wedding in 6 months, they're going to lose some weight. They're going to look a lot better. And it's like, but as soon as you have a goal or a date or something you need to do, there's that sense of urgency and people get shit done if they have something there.
That motivation's at a high. Like, it doesn't matter how tall that hill is, they're going to climb it.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. So, I forget if that was like the actual question or not, but it's like, those were the people who usually saw the best gains or progress. There would also just be some people, like if somebody told me, like I had one client, I think, who he wanted his bench to be bigger. So it's like, okay, cool. We'll work on bench. Like, you know, every time that you're with me, you could do this other stuff on the other days you're not here. And, you know, in a month or two, bench goes up, he's happy. Cool. Let's do more.
Yeah.
So, I guess just the people who were driven and had a specific goal or had a specific end date to have something done. Like, those are the people who always do the best. Yeah. Like, there is something to having a goal and not just aimlessly coming in and doing something. Cause that doesn't, you get a little bit better, but at some point it just dissipates. Cause you don't have, you don't have anything in the back of your head when shit gets tough that you want to try to fight for.
So for you, like going through, we'll say after college and whatnot, like what kind of goals did you have that you were training for?
At that time, I was kind of lost in terms of like a fitness or like what to do. I didn't really know because I had stopped doing any of the jiu-jitsu or MMA before I had gotten a personal training job.
Okay.
So I started working out just with a bunch of my buddies for probably like a year or two before I'd gotten that personal training job. But I'd gone away from that. And it was just like, oh, I just want to get bigger.
Yeah. Just hitting that bro split.
Yeah. Like that was it. Yeah. It would be probably the same split as you or like anybody else. Yeah. Like, hey, I had like legs on Monday, chest on Tuesday, back on Wednesday, shoulders. Like it was like, did the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then,
How much were we eating?
Not enough. No. I was an idiot. Like I did, like I would go like get McDonald's afterwards and then go drink with my buddies at night. So it's like there are years of my life wasted on that stupid shit. I can't, like when I look at it now, I'm like, wow, what the hell was I thinking?
So like were you still getting stronger at that point? Like were you still putting on size?
Yeah, I wasn't I remember like when you say like what was a goal? Like I remember for a couple months, I was like, I want to weigh over 200 pounds.
Okay.
I forget where I was at, but I was like, I'm just going to keep eating. And I'm just going to keep lifting. And I remember like weighing in on the scale at Lifetime and I was like 201.6. I was like, fuck yeah,
let's go.
And like that lasted for like an hour. So like, cause like whenever I got done working out, I lost a bunch of weight. And then after that, I'm like, I don't feel good. Like this is like, I guess there's not like necessarily a wrong way to put on weight unless you're just like eating and not working out.
Yeah.
But in terms of that, I didn't really like how it felt. So I don't remember, like there wasn't really any other goals like past that. I just liked working out. Like there'd be the goals of like, okay, I want to be able to bench this much, or I want to be able to leg press this much. But there wasn't a whole lot at the time. I was just working out to work out and like look better.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I was also like kind of lost in that sense where, going out with my friends drinking like when we wanted to and did this and this. So there wasn't a big focus on how good can I make this body look or be or feel.
Yeah.
It was just, I want to have fun with my friends and they want to work out with me. So cool. We'll do that too.
So moving past that, at what point did that change for you? think.
Probably have to like fast forward a little bit because like at Export, that's when I found that Orange Theory job.
Okay.
Started working out at Orange Theory and I really like the setup there. Yeah. I mean, I'm still working this, obviously. I like the setup.
Well, let's put a pause on that. Oh, how'd you get introduced to Orange Theory?
One of the coaches or one of the trainers at Export found the job because the Naperville studio had opened up. And so anyways, she had gotten a job there and she told me and Brian Rosen, who was working there. Mm-hmm. Hi, Brian, if you watch this. But anyways, we both got invited to like be coaches. Like, hey, they're looking for coaches. You're going to make X amount of dollars. This is like, it's a lot more fun and easy than... Not, I don't think it was like fun and easy, but it was like, it was a lot more fun to like coach like this group than it is to have, you know, just one person at a time. So anyways, that's how we kind of got the introductions. We got that, why can't I think of the word? She gave us that nod and then told her boss like, hey, you should hire these guys. And so they ended up hiring us. I went in first because I don't think Brian wanted the job at first. And then when he saw that we were having fun and doing it, then he came along in too. And we, I'm trying to think, because one was opening up in Orland Park.
Okay.
I lived out in New Lenox, so it was really close.
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about driving all the way to like Naperville every day. So I'm like, oh, perfect. This will work out. Yeah. I can work at that one. And anyways, that's how it got introduced. I think maybe there was a sales associate at Export who got a job as like a manager at that one. And that's, or maybe he moved or something and then told that other trainer. And that's how she found out. And that's when she told us. But it had just started coming on.
Yeah.
And that's how we found it.
So as far as like your fitness level, obviously like strong bench squat, deadlift, what all that stuff. Mm-hmm. When you started Orange Theory, did you have a good anaerobic or like what was?
No, it was pretty rough at first. Cause it's like, I remember being done with my first workout and feeling like I just got done with a wrestling practice.
Okay.
Like I just got like the shit kicked out of me. Like, and at the time I didn't know what the hell I was looking at with heart rate monitors or anything like that, but it was like maybe like 30, like 40 minutes in the orange and the red zone.
Yeah.
And I thought it was amazing that I was doing that. But then as you keep coming in there and like you keep doing the workouts, obviously it got better, but I wasn't doing anything like that in my own training.
Gotcha.
And so, and that's kind of the feeling that I like or go for, which is like same with CrossFit.
Yep.
Like you kind of like that feeling of being beat up at the end.
Yeah.
There's just something that feels good about that, you know, the traumatizing experience
of
whatever happens, you know, as long as you're not hurt or injured afterwards, but that felt a lot better to me than what I was doing. And I think within like a month or two of doing those Orange Theory workouts, I was starting to feel bored when I'd go and do my bro split at Lifetime. And I was like, all right, well, I'll keep doing this instead.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's when it changed. And then, you know, within that Orange Theory, you start to see some of the same exercises. There's different intervals you run, base, push, all out. So you start to see how you're getting better on the treadmill. You get to see how you're rowing better. It's really easy in those workouts to kind of see yourself improve on something if you're looking for it.
Yeah.
So that was another thing that like enticed me to do that more than what I was doing before.
Yeah, no, that's super nice for sure. So were you doing like the Orange Theory stuff at Lifetime or you just did the workouts at Orange Theory?
I just did the workouts at Orange Theory. I was still working out at Lifetime here and there.
Yeah.
And then that's like I said, when I started to get a little bit bored with it, that's when I started noticing I would like put a circuit together that was somewhat like Orange Theory at Lifetime.
Yeah.
Like here and there. And so, at some point after that, I just like, I stopped going to Lifetime altogether for a little bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't until me and Brian decided we want to start doing Olympic weightlifting. So we watched YouTube videos of like Kelly Starrett and Diane Fu. And we're like, let's go do this. Like we no proper training or anything.
Yes.
And so I think we went, I think it was called Blast Fitness. It was out in Naperville, but it was, was it off of Ogden? Anyways, we would go there.
Yeah.
Like idiots. Like there's no bumper plates there, but we're going to go snatch 135. We've never touched a bar before. He can verify it too, but like we would do that.
Yeah.
So then eventually we ended up getting a membership back at Lifetime. So we could do it cause they had bumper plates there at the time. So that's when we started making a return to Lifetime. So we do like Olympic lifting there.
Yeah.
And cause also like right around that time, we were coaching so much in Orange Theory that we just needed to be away from it in some way. And then I forget exactly. how or when it happened, but at some point CrossFit came, like, popped up on our radar, and that's when him and me walked into here and we're like, oh yeah, we want to try it out. You know, we Olympic lift a little bit and we do this, this, and this. So anyways, that's kind of like how it got into.
Yeah. Do you remember when you walked in here or how long ago that was?
I couldn't tell you. I know it was on a Monday afternoon and Mike was here because we just walked in. We didn't call or anything, but I remember walking in through that door and Mike coming up to us and we said, God, I think we said we were supple leopards or something like that. You know, it's Kelly Starr, right? Like, I literally think we said that. It's so nerdy. And he's like, I think he called us knuckleheads afterwards before he left.
My sister gave me a lot of crap for reading that book. She's like, oh, are you a supple leopard yet? I was like, come on, I'm trying. I'm trying.
I'm still trying to be. Like, it's like, to this day, I'll never stop.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, anyways, later that night, I came in for a workout. It was on a Monday night, and Scott was coaching.
Yep.
And, I don't know. I think everybody probably remembers their first CrossFit workout. I just remember being behind Eric Miller, who I had no idea who he was at the time. And I just thought, like, okay, cool, I'll try to keep up with this guy. And I believe the workout was 7 rounds of 7 power cleans, 7 thrusters, 7 burpees over the bar. I remember getting through the second round and being like, I'm going to die. What happened? Like, how is he 2 rounds ahead of me already? And like, he had finished the workout and like, now he's clapping for me. I'm like, what the F is this? And after that, I was like, take my money. Like, literally, I remember, like, talking. I think it was Scott. He's like, oh, yeah, you could try another couple workouts or something like that. I was like, no, I want to sign up right now.
You
like,
got the sale. Take it.
Right. You got me. And so I remember that. I just remember being on a Monday. I forget what got us to come in that day.
Yeah.
But anyways, that was my first time here.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say your body looked like? We'll go from, like, where it is now and then kind of like backtrack on like how your body looked, or did you always looked as jacked as you are now, or like when did where we're at now?
I'm more lean now than I think I've ever been.
Okay.
Like maybe I have some other times where I'm like for a week or two.
Yeah.
I'm more lean. But I wasn't, I've always hovered somewhere around like 185 to like 195. And when I'm sure there's probably pictures.
What are
of
you
something.
Right? What are you right now?
Like 180? I think I'm like 185, 187, somewhere in that range. Maybe go weigh myself afterwards.
Well, I don't mean, probably not because we're about the same weight, but I think you got a little bit more muscle on you. If
I'm shorter though, right? I mean,
yeah,
like
that's that means you got more muscle.
But yeah, but if you're taller, then that's going to be like harder for you to like put some.
I appreciate that. So. What you said you were under eating. When did you realize that you had to eat more? And then how did you do that?
Well, when I was referring to then, that was when I was still living at my dad's and I was hanging out with all my buddies. And this is like before some of them had gone off to college too. So I just like, I wasn't making a crazy amount of money, and the money that I was making, like I wasn't spending on food. I was spending on like going out. So, anyways, when me and Brian moved in together, we weren't necessarily like the best eaters, but at some point we started, it's called the vertical diet, efforting.
Yep.
So anyways, we read in on that. We bought the ebook, and I wouldn't say we ever like truly followed the vertical diet, but we tried to stay as close to it as we could. And it was actually very nice because 1 week he'd be the one who was like cooking the steak, the white rice, everything else. The other week I would do it. So if one of us didn't feel like doing it, the other one kind of took care of it. And that got us kicked off. And that motherfucker lost like 30, 40 pounds. It was ridiculous how much weight like Brian like lost.
Well, it's simple. You're going to be full. And that's one of the hardest things. If you're always hungry, like you're just, I'm just going to eat a little bit more. Why am I not losing weight? But yeah.
And
vertical diet is very nice.
Yes. And for me, I didn't have any goal of losing weight or anything. I just remember I was doing Misfit programming at the time. And one of their benchmarks that they had you do is you had to run 1,000 meters with a sandbag for time. And I forget what the weight on the sandbag was supposed to be, but I went on the scale to go see what I was going to, like, to see what the sandbag was. So I weighed myself with the sandbag. And that's when I went on the scale and I was like 182 or something. Yeah. And at the time, I think I was weighing more in the 190s. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I just had not weighed myself ever since we had started eating. I'm like, oh, I lost 15 pounds. I didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
But it made everything feel a lot better, especially gymnastics, things like that. Because not having 15 pounds on you, it's like when you're already at like a Globo gym and you're doing like a lat pull down. It's like that 15 extra pounds is like another 3 reps you can't get.
Yeah.
And that's how I think about it with the pull ups. It's like, well, 15 pounds, that's a lot more pull ups I can knock out. And so, anyways, that's more or less where I've hovered around. I've never really tried to put on weight again for that. But just going off of that vertical diet, like that just helped a lot. more in confidence of like, hey, if you just like stick to it and you find some stuff that you like, and again, don't eat like an asshole.
Yeah.
You'll get to where you want to get to. Like you'll start to like either lose some weight or tone up or see some strength gains.
Yeah.
So that was a cool, experience going through that. And like I said, I can't like speak enough for him, cause he went from weighing a lot to like getting, I think he got under whatever. I won't say his numbers. Yeah. That's his story. But anyways, like he looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it was great. So it was great to do that together, cause I don't think I could have done that by myself because I just didn't have the discipline at the time to actually like make meals, prep them, make sure everything was set up. So that was cool. Like having that help a lot of times helps you see on the other side, like, oh, I can do this on my own too. Yes. And I see what the benefit is. So I know it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that the motivation, the skill level, or once the skill level becomes easier, you don't need as much motivation. Mm-hmm. So we get our first workout in. Working out with Eric Miller. Yeah. Where do we go from there? Are we still doing a bunch of personal training? Is it just Orange Theory?
So at that point when I got here, I was done with personal training.
Okay.
Export didn't last much longer after I was at OTF. And so I was still doing, I think actually at the time when we started here, I was just doing like exclusively like CrossFit. I wasn't doing too many Orange Theory workouts. And then at some point, when I started wanting to be more serious about this, because like I was saying before, like that competitive itch from wrestling and jujitsu, it's like, oh, cool. This is competitive too. I'll do this all day.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of start noticing like, okay, keep going to like eating like an asshole, like drinking like an asshole on the weekends. I start realizing like, hey, if I don't do that over the weekend, that Monday workout feels a lot better.
Yeah.
My name's a little bit higher up the leaderboard.
Yeah.
I can like, maybe I should stop doing that. Maybe, see how well everything goes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, at that point, that's when I started taking it, like a little more seriously here and working towards that. And then at some point, I just remember, I mean, I couldn't tell you the exact day or the workout, but I just remember there was a day where I was like, well, I think me and Brian both did it together, but it was like, we did a CrossFit workout and we're like, well, do you want to go take an OTF? Like we had nothing else to do that night. Do you want to go take an OTF workout? I was like, yeah, do a double. Yeah, sure. Why not? And And we started doing that here and there. And that's when we're like, oh, wow. Like if you're keeping on track of your stuff, if you're eating enough, you're still like getting enough sleep, like, oh, cool. Doing these doubles, that helps me get in even better shape. It sucked the first week or two where you're adding a whole like extra hour of work onto it, but, it made a difference. So that's when I feel like I started doing more Orange Theory classes because I saw how much it was helping me out here as well.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, cool. Found a really good system here.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you start doing competitions at CrossFit?
It was, the first one was at Big Shoulders CrossFit in Elmhurst. What year?
Maybe Big Shoulders at Brendan's?
Yeah.
Yep. That he hasn't been around that. Well, I mean,
last year he had one.
Yeah.
Well, last year he had one, but
that's a relatively new one. Cause he was at the one in Chicago. Then he opened up the one with, Soroka. And then what was it? It's so the Big Shoulders one's still in the same place.
As of this year, I believe it was in the same gym as the first competition I had done.
You just started competing?
What do you mean?
Well, I just chose to do it. CrossFit wise, like how long have you been competing?
Oh, no. Sorry. No, this is like 5 or 6 years ago. The first one, like that first competition is what I mean.
Gotcha. Okay.
I just remember that was my first one because I remember it was like, I was like really nervous to sign up for it. But I remember doing it. I mean, I forget. I wish I could remember the name of the competition, but I remember like Sean O'Day was doing it. I think Mike Vile did it too. There were a bunch of people, but there was like a bunch of us from Amplify that did it. And I did. So like, screw it, I'm going to sign up for it. Let's see what happens. And then I remember there being bar muscle ups in the workout, and that made me nervous because I had bar muscle ups, but I didn't have a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, if this workout has a bunch of them, like this could like ruin me. I couldn't even tell you what that workout was, but I remember that making me pretty nervous. And after I'd signed up, I'm like, okay, I got to do more bar muscle ups. I got to make sure these feel good. And doing whatever that event was that day, I remember them not feeling that bad. And again, it was just like another confidence thing where I was like, okay, if I work at this and I have this goal of like, hey, I need to do more bar muscle ups, then it at least got me focused on something instead of just, I'll come in here and work out.
Yeah.
So that felt kind of good too, where I was like, I kind of connected the dots. Like, okay, if I sign up for another competition, I see something that kind of scares me. That's kind of my focus on, okay, I got to work on this so I don't look like a fool when I'm doing it on the, on the floor.
Mm-hmm. So as you're going through the competitions and stuff like that, when do you start, like, do you get an itch to coach here, or like, what does that look like?
I wouldn't say I've really had an itch to coach, because that ever since I started working like out here at the Orange Theories that I work at, I've always had a pretty full schedule. Mm-hmm. So coaching here happened sometime after COVID. So it was like a couple years down the road. Yeah. It wasn't like I was doing competitions and then wanted to coach right away or anything like that. Nor at the time did I think I was like even like good enough to coach. Like I was still like getting picked on. Like I was not great at all when I first started. I was just willing to try that stuff out.
Right.
So that, the coaching aspect of it, I don't think I started, like I said, it was after COVID for sure. Mm-hmm. That might've been like late 2020 or something. So maybe like 2.5 years I've been coaching here. Mm-hmm. And even then I was nervous as hell when I first did it.
Yeah.
I'd coached like, you know, thousands of classes of Orange Theory. And it's not a CrossFit class. I don't know how this is going to go. Even like, and I feel pretty confident in what I know and talking to people and communicating certain things, but still like first time going into it, I'm like, what if everybody hates me? Like, even though I knew everybody, I was like, at the time I was like, this is nervous. Like this, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff do you do? Obviously the physical stuff we have down pretty good, but it's not necessarily mentally preparedness, but what do you do for your mental health outside of the gym?
Let's see. It can vary from day to day. I still play video games. So it's always like a relief for like something that's like relaxing. It could be any video game.
Yeah.
But that's always something that kind of like keeps me not focusing on other stuff. If there's anything that's getting to me. But lately I've tried to be better and not be a man child and like read books and have audio books on things like that. Yeah. So there have been multiple that I've been listening to or am listening to.
Yeah.
And so I'll do those. A lot of them tend to be some sort of like maybe self-help book or something. Right. I think one of the first ones I read was David Goggins' first book, something like that.
I just listened to that.
Yeah. And that was a little while ago. But then after that, then the app shows you other books that you might like. So then Atomic Habits by James Clear pops up. So I started listening to that. And then, but anyways, like self-help books like that start popping up, and then I start listening or like reading those. And you know, as you're listening to it, like you find things that you can do or maybe other habits you could pick up that help you out with that stuff.
Yeah.
Mentally. So all those things have kind of helped out.
What have you implemented that you've got from those books?
That's a good question. There's a lot. I get like one example, and this is like the Atomic Habits book, but one of the things he says is about making a habit and how like more or less specific you need to be about it. And I think he uses the example of push-ups. He goes, I'm going to do 10 push-ups a day. Cool. That's not necessarily like good enough though. Cause like, when are you going to do that?
Right.
Cause it's very easy to say like, okay, I'll do those 10 push-ups, but I'm not going, like, I don't feel like doing right now. I just woke up. Oh, I got to go to work soon. So I'm going to go work and I'll come back home and I'll do it. And then you get back home. It's like, well, I got to make dinner. And then by the time you have to go to sleep, well, I don't want to do 10 push-ups before I go to bed at night. So you just went a whole day. You didn't do your 10 push-ups, even though it's seemingly a very easy goal.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just remember in that book, one of the things that was like kind of enlightening was being precise with when you're going to do something to couple it with another habit. So if there's something you know you're going to do every day, brush your teeth. Every time I brush my teeth, I'm going to do this right afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's how you kind of couple it together. So anyways, being that specific with it, and I think he uses it as the push-ups. He goes, like, as soon as I get home from work, I know I'm going to put on my workout clothes and I'm going to do my 10 push-ups before I even like step into the kitchen, before I even do this. So anyways, I'd never thought that deeply about a habit or doing something. I think maybe I'm the weird one, but I think most people probably think it's like, oh, well, I'll just go do it.
Yeah.
And to realize that it takes more than that and you have to be pretty precise with it. You need to fit into your day where you think and you know you can fit it in.
Yeah.
Cause it's really easy to just put something off. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to do it. So those have been the things that I think have helped out the most, like being more productive and starting better habits. There's another one, Jordan Peterson has, where he talks about what's the least, I'm going to paraphrase this wrong, but it's like, what's the, What's the one thing you know you should do that you would do? And when he explains that, he says it's like you're going to feel really pathetic when you realize this habit or this thing that you need to fix in your life is so minuscule and small.
Okay.
And I'll say like a little bit embarrassing, like I never used to make my bed. Okay. So this is like a habit I decided I'm going to try to do. And this is very recently.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. He gives an example of somebody else, but he says something about this habit of like maybe like cleaning the person's room. He says like the person couldn't even bring the vacuum into the room to actually vacuum the room. And so he talks about like how pathetic of a first step it needs to be to do it. Like, so the first day I make my bed perfectly.
Yeah.
The second day I'm like, I really don't feel like doing this at all. So my first step that I was willing to do is I just threw all of the sheets onto the bed.
Gotcha.
And I was like, cool, I guess this will be my first step.
Yeah.
Again, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, he told me I could be pathetic. So this is my pathetic first step. Gotcha. And then eventually I was like, okay, like I think after like 2 days, just throwing the sheets onto the bed, I'm like, okay, I'll start putting one of them on.
Yeah.
Day after that, I start putting like everything on, tightening up, looks great. And so after a few days, I was literally just making my bed every day. But for whatever reason, like just mentally, like after that first day, the second day is like, I don't want to, I don't want to straighten this whole thing out. Like, I don't want to do this at all, but just taking those small little steps to get there.
Yeah.
And I bring that up because of the James Clear thing, the Atomic Habits, because you taking that small step of, I'm just going to put my sheets onto the bed, that like, that was like the precise thing I had to do, because saying I'm going to make my bed was too large of a freaking step. No matter how pathetic that sounds, like that was too large of a step for me at the time.
Yeah.
And so, and it only took a couple of days before I was like, oh, I can do this every day. So that's one of the things that I feel like in a lot of these books, they start to get to is like, what is something like, you know, you should do. And like, how do you keep implementing this every day? So it's always a habit. And even on your worst day, you know, you're going to do it.
Gotcha.
And, you know, something clicks for everybody differently, but that was one of the things that really clicked for me is like, okay, the first couple steps to get better at anything is going to be probably way like, it's going to be a humbling thing. It's not going to be exactly the thing that you need to add on, or it's going to feel like way weaker of a thing than what you would regularly take on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like that big goal is putting just the sheets on the bed. And like, if you say that out loud, someone's like, that's what it is.
Right.
It's that's all you got.
Yeah. And if people are watching this, I'm sure I like get laughed at, but I laughed at myself. Yeah, I'm like, this is the pathetic first step. Cool. Yeah. Like I had to throw them on there and it ended up working. But that, since I had done that. Again, this is it's fairly recently, but ever since then, it's made it a little bit easier to take a first step. And so anyways, I bring this up, you say the mental thing, but that's made it a lot easier to try different things or do different things. Or like when I'm talking to people, like I said, I was, you know, introverted about stuff, like talking to people a little bit more, things like that. You know, you find that, you find that, okay, if I just take like these small little steps to get to it, maybe I'll get better at not feeling anxious talking to some people.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's been very mentally like opening to me. Whereas like before, maybe I'd be closed off to it. Like, I'm not going to do it. That's not me.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
big circle around
is just like, that's something that I've really been doing a lot. Is like listening to those audiobooks and reading all those things, because I feel like there's always something to grow from, learn from, no matter what. And it doesn't matter who the voice is or who the author is. There always seems to be something that you learn or take away from one of those books. And, as long as you're introspective enough, I feel like you can look at your life and see like, oh yeah, this is me.
Right.
Like, is it? So like I said, like when, Jordan Peterson was saying about somebody not being able to clean up their room, I was like, oh, that's me with my bed.
Yeah.
Like for sure. Like that's fucking terrible. So anyway, that small little thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It gave me something to focus on even when I'm at home. So it's not always about work or always about something else. I'm, you know, trying to improve other things. If that makes
100%.
Sense.
So we're working out. We got the mental stuff going on. Do we take trips? Do we go on vacations? What's our release other than the gym and games?
Here and there, I'll go out of town. It's not very often. I'm usually working or working out, but Tyler and Spencer, we went to a competition last week in Davenport. So like, you know, that's, it's not like a huge trip or anything, but got me out of town. And so like, that was fun. Last year we went to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So like there'll be things like that that end up kind of getting tied along to that, as well as like with Orange Theory, there'll be a convention each year. Okay. This year it's in Colorado. So nice. That'll be sometime in October. So a lot of times the trips are like that, and I kind of look forward to them just because it's like, okay, cool. I'm not going to have to actually like work or anything like that. And I get to do some stuff that I actually like, I enjoy doing. Besides that, one of my best friends that lives in Georgia, I'll go, I'd say like maybe once or twice a year, go out there, visit him. So that's another thing that, I'll throw out there, but I'm not a huge traveler. Like I don't, at the moment, I don't feel like a big need to, to go out anywhere. I do enjoy it, but it's not like top of the list.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're grinding a lot now as far as just like working out so much, or do you feel like you've found like a happy place? Like you don't feel run down. You feel like you can train and still improve. Where do you feel you're at?
I guess kind of like what I was just saying a couple minutes ago, there's always something I can improve on. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think, like I have a perfect work life balance at all, but it is better than it used to be for sure. But I think it's just more like the mental aspect of it. Before a lot of times it's easy to feel closed in or feel like, oh, there's no end in sight.
Yeah.
But lately I feel like I've learned how to like find and, light at the end of the tunnel for, you know, some of those weeks or months. I mean, I'm sure you've had it too, where it's like, it just seems like the grind is never going to end. It's like, what is this all for? And then, I've kind of learned along the way to like find things. Like you almost have to make your own light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I'm going to go until I get here and then I'm going to take a break. Yeah. So I've learned to do that. And so in that respect, I feel a lot better.
Mm.
But still probably plenty of things to work on or improve on.
For sure. So we'll end it up with the same two questions that everyone gets. As far as the definition of health goes, what is health to you? Not necessarily the dictionary definition, but how would you define it?
That's good. I think I would say what makes you happy and makes you better. Like, cause like if you're healthy, that means you're probably like you're pursuing something, whether it's like looking good, feeling good, whatever. And that's got to make you happy in some way.
Yeah.
So I guess that's, I feel like that's a simple way to put it.
Yeah, I like that.
Happy and helping you get better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And then what's something from your life that the people listening to the podcast would be able to take away as a positive?
From what we just talked about?
Anything in your life.
Stay consistent. I don't know, maybe it's just because it's like fresh on the top of my mind, but like seriously, if there's a habit or a thing out there that you want to do, it's okay to admit that the first couple steps are not going to be as cool as you wanted them to be, but all it takes is those first few steps and then you can make like these little habits or, and that's going to turn into something that could be better. But I think that's probably the other like big one. It's just like, it's just fresh on my head right now. It's like, if there's something out there that you want to do or do a little bit more of, like, I guess try not to be scared or intimidated by it so much that you won't even try it.
Right.
The first few steps from what I've realized or seen when I go and try to do different things, it's like the first few steps are always like nerve wracking, but after you get past it, you're like, oh, cool. Yep. Like this, especially if it's something you know you want to do, or there's some sort of attraction there, it's probably a good chance on the other side, you're going to feel pretty good that you did it. So yeah,
absolutely. Fantastic. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, man.